Section 1. You will hear a customer phoning a builder to discuss some work she would like him to do on her home. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Thorndykes?
Good morning. Is that Mr. Thorndyke?
Speaking. How can I help?
I've got quite a few things which need painting and fixing in the flat, and I wonder whether you'd be able to do the work.
I'm sure I'd be able to help, but let me take down a few details.
Yes, of course.
Well, firstly, how did you hear about us?
It was my friend May Hampton. You did some excellent work for her a couple of years ago. Do you remember?
Oh, yes. That was in West Park Flats. Lovely lady.
Yes, she is.
And what's your name, please?
It's Edith Pargeter.
Edith, can you spell your surname, please?
It's P-A-R-G-E-T-T-E-R.
Double T, right. And do you live in West Park Flats as well?
No, actually, it's East Park, Flat 4.
Oh, right. That's over the road, I seem to remember. Quite difficult to get to.
Yes, it's at the back of the library.
Right, I know. And what's your phone number?
875-934. But I'm out a great deal in the afternoons and evenings.
So would the best time to ring you be in the morning?
Yes.
Fine, I've made a note of that. Can I just ask, I'll be in a van and I know parking's rather difficult around your flat. Where would you recommend?
Well, I always tell people in larger vehicles to park by the post box on the other side of the road from the entrance.
Good, thanks.
And will you be able to give me a full itemised quote?
Oh, yes. I'll list all the jobs separately with individual prices.
That'd be a great help.
No problem.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Now, what would you like me to do?
Firstly, and most urgently, is in the kitchen. With all the weather damage, the glass in the door has cracked and I'd need that fixing.
I presume you mean replacing?
Oh, yes, and as soon as possible.
What I'll do is come round tomorrow morning and do that immediately.
Oh, thank you so much. The other things aren't so urgent, but...
Now, I'll make a note of everything you want doing.
Well, in the kitchen, I'd like some painting doing.
All the kitchen walls?
Just the area over the cooker. It's very greasy.
Right, it does tend to get that way.
Yes.
Well, if you want a proper job done, what I'd need to do is strip the old paint and plaster it about a week before I paint it.
Of course. Now, May tells me you also do work in the garden.
That's right.
Well, I'd like you to replace a fence.
Just one?
Yes, at the far end.
Fine, shouldn't be a problem.
And that's the lot.
Fine. Yeah, as I say, I can come round tomorrow morning to look over things with you.
Well, that's great, thank you.
So, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow at...
That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Section two. You will hear a recorded talk giving an introduction to the historical theme park of Manham Riverport in England. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Welcome to Manham Port, where 1,000 years of history are brought to life. All the family can enjoy a day out at Manham, visit our copper mine, see models of the machinery it used, have your photo taken in 19th century costume, experience at first hand how people lived at different stages throughout history, and especially how children studied, worked, and played. The port of Manham is located in beautiful and peaceful countryside, on a bend in the great River Avon, and developed here because it's the highest navigable point of the Avon. Boats can go no higher up this river, and proved a handy place to load and unload cargo to and from the sea, which is over 23 miles away. A small port was already established here when, about 900 years ago, tin was discovered nearby, though it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution, when a tremendous need for metals of all kinds developed, that Manham expanded to become one of the busiest ports in the country. And because it was already so busy, prospectors began to look for other minerals, and by the end of the 19th century, lead, copper, manganese, and arsenic were added to the cargoes leaving Manham. In the early days, the ores had been smelted, or processed, in the same area they were mined. But as demand grew, the smelting process required huge factory furnaces, or fires, to melt the metal from the rock, and there was not enough coal in the local area, so the rocks containing minerals had to be shipped long distances. Sadly, in the 20th century, the great port of Manham declined, and thousands of workers were forced to emigrate out of the area. The building at the port fell into disrepair, and the place became almost forgotten. But then the Manham Trust was formed to conserve the historical resources of the area. It organised scores of local volunteers to remove undergrowth to find the original outlines of the installations. It then brought in paid professionals to match installations with maps of the original port complex and to set about reconstructing it. Today, you can see the results of this ambitious programme of restoration. The intention, and we believe this will be realised before the end of the year, is to return Manham Port to the condition it reached at its peak as the greatest copper port in the country.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
But what can you do and see on your visit today? Here are just a few highlights. We suggest you start with the visit to the copper mine. Travel on converted mining trains and journey into the depths of the mountain along seams once worked by hundreds of miners. Watch out especially for the great pumping machines which rid the mine of water. But please be warned that, like all mines, ours is very dark and closed in, and we do say that children under five, and also dogs, should not be taken into the mine. The next recommended visit is to the village school. While looking round the classrooms, take a special look at our display of games, which is one of the largest in the world. And it's recommended that you time your visit to coincide with a guided tour. This will give you the opportunity to ask lots of questions. Near the school is the beautiful old sailing ketch called the George. You're welcome to board the boat and look round the cabins. Look out for the ship's wheel, which was missing until only 5 years ago when it was dredged out of the silt by a local fisherman. We have no idea how it got there, but it's been polished and proudly restored to its original place on the boat. Please take care going down the ladders if you wish to visit the lower deck. We don't recommend you allow young children to use them. So we hope you have a memorable visit to Manham Port, and we'll tell your friends all about us.
That is the end of section two. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turn to section three. Section three. You'll hear three university students talking about a presentation which one of them has to give. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. I've heard you've been stressing out about your presentation on art.
I am.
Are you still going to talk about the different types of art?
Yes. Well, I was planning to, but there's so much stuff on the subject that I'm finding it difficult to put it all into one short presentation.
Huh. I usually have the opposite problem. There's nothing worse than going blank, forgetting your words, in front of a group of people.
Well, the problem is that I don't know how to organize what I want to say in the presentation.
Well, you know everything there is to know about the subject. It's just a question of selecting what you want to talk about.
Well, there's a lot to discuss about the different periods in art.
That's a good way to start. Then you can bring in how specific types of art were popular in each period.
Yes, like how sculpture was popular in the classical period and paintings were popular in the Renaissance period.
And how now a wide variety of media are used to create modern art.
As long as you keep it concise, because it's a large area, there are so many periods and movements in art, and you don't want to just list them one by one.
I agree. An explanation of the movements and periods in art wouldn't be too long.
You're right. I need to just pick out some key points. Just mention the periods quickly so that I can move on to the real topic of the presentation.
Yes, the variety of art, like sculpture, paintings, installations.
I have an idea. Why don't you prepare a timeline to show to the class? That would be a nice visual, and it would focus your ideas so you don't get too sidetracked.
Great idea. It would certainly cut down on time.
Right then. Where are we? You'll begin with a very short introduction to the historical periods of art. Then, you'll talk about popular types of art within these periods. That's sorted. Maybe you could also mention some key works of art in each period. Like the Venus de Milo statue, or the screen by Edvard Munch, and give some interesting facts on them?
That's not a bad idea, because it does give people a frame of reference when I talk about specific kinds of art. After giving a historical context, I should really talk about different forms of art, shouldn't I?
Yes, you should.
After that, you can conclude with a question on what is considered to be art. Now, that would be really interesting.
Yes, comparing the traditional views of art with modern views.
Exactly.
I think I'll have a collection of pictures, including famous pieces of art from classic to modern, projected on the wall, like the Mona Lisa, and some pop art, and ask people whether they think it's art or not.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Showing some famous works and asking people what art is would certainly lead to discussion in the room. People's appreciation of art is so subjective, and it comes down to taste.
That's what I'm hoping for. Some disagreement to liven up the presentation.
And you could stick in some really controversial ones like graffiti and modern art installations in between pieces of art that are universally accepted, like the work of the Renaissance painters.
Sounds good to me. I have to say, I really don't understand some modern art myself. There was one recently that was just a pile of rubbish. It doesn't require much skill to create, does it? And what does it mean? There's no point to it.
Actually, Joe, I like some modern art. It makes you look at the world in a different way. Artists now have the freedom to express themselves completely.
Yes, but there is an idea now that anything can be art.
I've heard of paintings being sold for large sums of money, which have been done by small children and animals.
Now that's ridiculous.
Oh, you could find one of those paintings and put it in your presentation, couldn't you, Paul? That would really be interesting.
Well, Paul, what do you think?
I like it. Just thinking. I'll need to do some more research to find pictures for the slideshow.
Yes, we can help you, can't we, Joe?
Of course. If you go to the fine arts section of the library, I'm sure you'll find everything you need. Just ask the staff and they'll give you access to a slide bank of hundreds of famous works of art. And if you still can't find what you're looking for, use the library computers to go online. There are lots of images on the internet. Of course, you'll need to use a search engine like Google, but it's dead easy.
Thanks, guys. I'm feeling much clearer about the project. Your ideas have been really useful. I think I should end with a quote of some kind by a famous artist. What do you think?
That's a good idea. Now let's go to the library and see what they have.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 4. Section 4. You'll hear a lecturer talking to students about languages. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 36. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 36.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today, in the first lecture on anthropology, we're going to look at languages and how they are disappearing fast and what effect that's having on people and the world as a whole. We hear so much in the news about the possible extinction of animal and plant species in the world. It's a sad thing that one day certain animals will cease to exist. But how many of you are aware that the world's languages are facing a similar threat? Believe it or not, there are currently more than 6,000 languages spoken in the world today, but experts believe that by the end of this century, this number will be reduced to half. And as each language dies, the culture and specialized knowledge of a community dies with it. The unique knowledge of the environment, local wildlife, plants, animals, and ecosystems, not to mention the cultural traditions of the people themselves, will become lost forever. In essence, each language is not just spoken or written words strung together. Language has the power to hold the entire history of a people. Approximately one language dies every 2 weeks. This is an unprecedented situation. Never before in history has there been this rate of rapid decline. Most human languages are spoken by relatively very few people. Let's put this into perspective. The Ethnologue, the leading authority on the world's languages, has put together a list of every living language known to man. There are over 6,500, of which 6,000 have available population figures. Now, 109 million people speak just 10 of these languages, and they are the major languages of the world. At the opposite end of the scale, there are minority languages which are only spoken by a few people, and that's what this chart is illustrating. The number of languages is represented on the vertical axis, and the total number of languages that make up this group is an astounding 1,619. For each of these smaller language groups, the population range of speakers goes from 1 to 999. Even more incredible is the fact that out of these small languages, over 200 of them have a speaker population ranging from just 1 to 9. Imagine only 9 people speaking your language in the whole world, or even only 1 or 2 people. Now, let's think geographically. In total, there are 516 languages that are nearly extinct, where only a few members of the older generation survive. When they die, the language will die with them, lost forever. The majority of nearly extinct languages come from the Pacific and the Americas, making up 74%, followed by Asia at 15%. Europe has the smallest percentage of languages that are nearly extinct, only 2%.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 37 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 37 to 40.
Entire languages which have survived for centuries are disappearing as we speak. But why is this happening now? There are several reasons for a language's demise. Globalization has made the world smaller, and technology has made it easier for people separated by vast distances to communicate in a common language, which further ensures the growth in economic status for such communities. Minority languages have given way to the main languages of global communication, like English. On a social level, speakers may feel the minority language to be old-fashioned and behind the times. Maybe even speakers are slightly embarrassed to speak the language of their forefathers, identifying more with an international language that brings with it improved economic status. Now, some do argue that a reduction in the number of world languages is inevitable, and anything to ease communication between nations is a good thing, and, granted, there is a point to be made there, but what are the long-term implications of this? Consider this. Language, in both spoken and written form, is the vehicle for oral traditions to be passed down through generations. When a language becomes extinct, this link is broken and these oral traditions are lost. This has enormous implications for the identity of a community. We can't stop the changes that are happening in the world, but we can try to keep languages alive through language maintenance programs and by documenting languages before they disappear, so they can be studied and maybe even resurrected in the future. It's also important to remember that many people who speak threatened languages can neither read nor write. Helping them become literate goes a long way towards protecting the language. Preserving a language is not easy, but there have been exceptional cases where languages have been brought back to life. In Ireland, Irish Gaelic, once a dying language, through national determination, is now spoken by 13% of the country's population. We'll go into what happened there in more detail in my second lecture.
That is the end of Section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test. You now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet.